and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Annie Reese.
And today we're talking about quiche.
Yes.
And this is to kind of like stave off Annie's, I'm not going to say insane, that would be impolite, but just high level egg fascination.
I have a lot of enthusiasm for eggs. you probably got a taste of it in Whiskey Sour when I discovered the complimentary bar egg. I went on a crazy Easter egg hunt.
Kind of, because
I learned about Easter and why the whole egg thing. Anyway, Lauren was very kind and was like, well, let's do quiche, because there's also another fascinating thing I stumbled across with quiche. So it kind of combined the two, and we will be talking about it, believe me.
So, quiche.
Yeah. What is it?
Quiche, it's one of those dishes that can be made with just about anything you like, but the base is so simple. It's just a savory egg custard baked into a single crust.
Simple.
Quiche. Mm-hmm. You can suspend cheese, meats, and or vegetables in the custard before you bake it. The result should be a velvety textured, kind of slightly quivery sort of jello-like filling in a nice flaky crust. And quiche can be served either hot or cold or any temperature in between, really.
Mm-hmm.
A listener with the Twitter handle Restless Living says their father-in-law calls it omelet pie with that weird French name.
That's such a dad thing to say. Really is.
And the variations are pretty much endless. The crust can be pastry or puff or bread dough. The fillings can be just whatever you dang want. It's sort of like a custard-based pizza.
Hmm.
Yeah. Bacon, cheese, mushrooms, and spinach are pretty classic, but you can put anything you want in there.
Options are endless. And according to Urban Dictionary, quiche is slang for hot or seriously hot or even next level of hotness.
Wow.
I've never heard this, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, sure.
So let's look at the history a bit. If we break quiche down to bare bones, a pastry shell filled with savory mixture of eggs, fat, and seasoning, they've been around since ancient Roman times.
Yeah, this was about the time that domestic chickens became widespread. And so with their newfound abundance of eggs, Romans figured out that eggs are pretty good binding agents. And they made lots of different eggy dishes called patina, named for the sort of pie pan that they were baked in. And these could be savory or sweet or both at the same time. And either more omelet-like or more custard-like. The custard part was kind of influenced by the Greeks. And I guess brains were a real popular add-in.
Ooh. I didn't stumble across that in my research. Okay.
There you go. But they didn't necessarily have a crust, but when they did,
the crust of these early quiches, much like coffins, were not meant to be eaten. They were containers or even used as a sort of paper towel to soak up the juices.
Okay.
Yeah, much like today's quiches, they could be really simple with just meat and potatoes, or quite elaborate, made with quail, peacock, or whole stuffed lamb. Whole stuffed lamb and quiche. Okay.
That's a very large pie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Across Europe, you could find huge early quiches for ceremonies and small cold ones for more regular meals. And a whole trade existed around selling leftover pastry, sometimes made more appetizing, when soaked with meat juice to the poor who would gather outside castles and other aristocratic dwellings trying to get some of the stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, a whole trade. Skipping ahead to medieval Europe, tarts at the time could be either a dessert thing or more of a non-dessert thing, and some of them resembled modern-day quiche.
They'd sometimes be called crustards.
Crustards. Okay.
Which I just pronounced with a French accent. I'm not sure why.
I appreciated it.
Okay.
On Ember Day, a meatless day for Christians, there was a recipe for a tart that called for cheese, eggs, spices, and pastry crust. That sounds fairly quiche-like. And here's the recipe. It's in old, ye old English, so here we go. Parboil onions and sage and parsley and hew them small. Then take good fat cheese and bray it and do thereto eggs and temper it up therewith and do thereto butter and sugar and raisins of currants and powder of ginger and of cannel. Meddle all this well together and do it in a coffin and bake it uncovered and serve it forth.
Since we've mentioned the word twice, I want to remind everyone, in case anyone either didn't catch our apple pie episode or has forgotten, the term coffin was one of ye old terms for pie crust.
Yes.
Which is charming as all get out.
It kind of is. It's usually spelled with a Y, too.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it.
As you do. But,
yes.
But yeah, no, that sounds like a nice quiche. I'd eat that.
Mm-hmm. Another recipe of medieval Europe, tarte du brie, also echoes of quiche. Take a crust inch deep in a trap. Take yolks of Erin raw and cheese rouillon and meddle it in the yolks together and do thereto powder, ginger, sugar, saffron, and salt. Do it in a trap, bake it, and serve it forth. I love serve it forth.
Serve it forth.
Yes. It sounds so much more epic than what's really happening.
Yeah, yeah. You basically have to be like Patrick Stewart in order to really say it correctly. These spiced baked custards with a crust were sometimes also called duchettes, and a honey-sweetened one was reportedly served at the coronation of King Henry IV in 1399.
Ooh, very fancy indeed. When a lot of us think of quiche and the modern quiche, I'd wager Quiche Lorraine comes to mind.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. This originated in what is now Lorraine, France, yes, but in medieval Europe, the area was the Germanic kingdom of Lotharingian.
Lorraine has actually only been under French rule for about 300 years now, as in 2017.
Yeah. The word quiche itself comes from the Franco-German word for cake, Kuchen or Küche. So it's actually kind of German. Probably a German chef created it. We don't know. Borders are complicated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you haven't heard of Quiche Lorraine, it's a bacon and classically Gruyere or sometimes creme fraiche.
Right.
Quiche. It's pretty tasty.
Yeah. And they were generally made in a cast iron skillet. According to La Russe Gastronomique, quiche should only be served as an hors d'oeuvre, never as a dessert course.
Oh, no. Definitely not.
That is a big faux pas. If you add onions, you have quiche Alsacienne. Seriously, so many regional varieties.
Oh, yeah.
But what about quiche in the U.S.?
Quiche in the United States?
Maybe sexism?
Oh,
maybe?
Buddy.
Yeah. We'll talk all about that after a quick break from a word from our sponsor. So, quiche started as a staple in rural areas, which the simplicity of ingredients kind of reflects.
Sure. You know, you've got eggs, you've got a little bit of leftover dairy, whatever else in your icebox you need to get rid of.
Right. But it spread from there, becoming popular in the U.S. sometime around the 1950s, really trending in the U.S. in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Quiche in America was a bit more like a pie casserole thing than the traditional French quiche. French quiche was thinner compared to the deep dish American variety, of course. Americans added all kinds of stuff to quiche. It was fairly common to find quiche on restaurant menus. You could buy slices of quiche, typically served with a salad, pretty much anywhere. You could have quiche for brunch, for lunch, for dinner, as a snack. You get the idea. According to Jean Anderson's The American Century Cookbook, the most popular recipes of the 20th century, despite a handful of cookbooks containing quiche recipes from the 1930s onward, quote, quiche madness didn't descend upon us until the late 1970s and go-go 80s, when chefs outdid themselves dreaming off-the-wall combos. And Sylvia Lovgren wrote in her book, Fashionable Food, 7 Decades of Food Fads, while quiche was both a popular and hearty appetizer, it was also sturdy and could be held for hours. Quiche's enduring popularity into the 70s had a great deal to do with the scope it allowed creative cooks.
Mm.
And speaking of creative cooks, Julia Child helped make quiche more mainstream in the U.S. by including it in her cookbooks, which chefs referenced for menu item ideas. Her version of Quiche Lorraine did without the bacon.
Huh.
Just FYI.
Okay.
And quiche grew popular in England around the same time, although they called it ham and cheese pie. And it also sometimes had a top crust.
Quiche with a top crust. That's bold.
Very bold. When the Kennedys were in the White House, their love of French food was well known. From René Verdun's 1967 The White House Chef Cookbook, Mr. Kennedy was very fond of the tiny quiches he had for lunch. And this cookbook included a recipe for Quiche Lorraine.
We may have reached peak American quiche in the early 1980s. By 1981, there were these boutique quiche restaurants like Ms. Tish's in L.A., and they were selling pies for up to $50 a pop, which is a little bit over $130 today.
Wow.
Yeah. According to an article from The Time in People magazine, their clientele list read like the Bel Air phone book.
There was an article in People magazine about a quiche boutique?
Yes.
That's pretty excellent. But it couldn't last.
No. The quiche bubble burst.
It did. The popularity of quiche took a steep dive in the U.S. and in the U.K. to a lesser extent in the 1980s for two main reasons. Fear of cholesterol and masculine stereotypes. Bum, bum, bum. I don't know. Okay, so this brings us to the weird kind of sexist bit of the episode.
There was this kind of oversaturation of quiches in popular culture, and they're a little bit fussy to make, and they were perceived as kind of bougie, sort of like the pumpkin spice latte of their time, I guess. And so they wound up seeming unmasculine.
Yeah. To the ridiculous point that in 1982, a book descended upon the U.S. called Real Men Don't Eat Quiche.
It was written by a 20-something-year-old humorist, a satirist, first as kind of a long essay that was published in Playboy and then expanded into this book that would sit on the New York Times bestseller list for over a year.
Wow. And I have kind of a long quote I want to read about how it started from an April 1st, 1982 article in the Chicago Tribune written by Bob Green, so you can kind of get a taste of what this was. Rejoice, all you American men who are sick of having Alan Alda held up as your role model, racquetball held up as your sports model, and quiche held up as your food model. You have a new hero. His name is Bruce Feirstein. He is an author, and his credo is simple and pure. Real men don't eat quiche. Feirstein has set out to define once again, to a nation that has somehow forgotten it, what real men are and what real men do. The first salvo of his Real Men manifesto appears in the May issue of Playboy.
And then he goes on to quote Feirstein.
Real men do not have meaningful dialogues. Real men do not find things super. Real men do not wear anything with more than 4 zippers. Real men do not wear bikini underwear. Real men do not have vanity license plates. 4 things you won't find in real men's pockets. Lip balm. Breath freshener. Opera tickets and recipes for quiche. A real man would be an airline pilot. A quiche eater would be a travel agent. The real man's diet? Steak, hamburger, cheeseburger, bacon cheeseburger, pizza burger, chili burger, ham and Swiss on rye, spaghetti, macaroni and cheese, french fries, home fries, hash browns, potato chips, pretzels, beer, imported beer, imported dark beer, corn on the cob, orange soda. Real men will avoid the quiche of death. That's some pretty serious stuff.
Oh, was there a problem with like chapstick and breath freshener? I don't know if
you're just supposed to have chapped lips and smell terrible, and all the ladies will want to kiss you then.
Oh,
yeah. So that's a lot. This is also I ran across this, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to do quiche that I mentioned in the beginning. Real men don't eat quiche, and I was like, whoa, I need to look into this. So after that, there was a follow-up from the April 12th edition of the Chicago Tribune. Egads, it looks as if the quiche eaters really are about to take over the world. Recently, we discussed the real men versus quiche eaters controversy. Now I've come across startling evidence that indicates the quiche eaters are becoming a greater force than anyone may have previously imagined. An all-too-real man caves into quiche.
This piece would go into how one Eric Weber, who had previously written a book called How to Pick Up Girls, followed it up with a decidedly different book called Connecting.
Okay.
I think the whole thing was meant to be at least a little bit facetious or satirical, but I'm not positive that all of the fans of the book got that.
No. And when I first found this, a lot of people took it very seriously.
Yeah.
Or not very seriously, but they agreed with it.
Yeah, yeah. They took it on as kind of their own credo.
Whew.
So, sorry about it, quiche.
And then, in 1987, the Chicago Tribune's Beverly Dillon wrote, "In the fickle world of food fads, one of the biggest trends a few years ago was the quiche. Basically a pie crust filled with an egg custard, the quiche lends itself to embellishment. Cooks found that just about anything could be added to the egg filling, from vegetables to seafood. Quiche became so identified with trendy food that it inspired the popular question, do real men eat quiche? After that, the dish seemed to lose favor. It's now time to bring it back. Some real men say now is the time to bring back quiche." It's a lot of debate about the quiche. I guess it's kind of been rehabilitated. Although, I will say, I think of it as kind of a fancy brunch thing, and I do personally feel like I see more women ordering it. And in my own experience, the only time I've ever had quiche ever is at funeral wakes.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. So I kind of have a negative
association with it, sure.
It's just like people bring it, I guess, because it can be served at any temperature.
Yeah.
It lasts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of protein in it. You know, that's good.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'll have to give it another go.
Right. It's one of the foods that I shouldn't really eat because of the high egg content.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Too bad.
It's okay. Speaking of this question of quiche, in 2010, there was a study that was published in the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science called Real Men Don't Eat Quiche, Regulation of Gender Expressive Choices by Men. The authors ran a series of experiments to see whether men and women would display a preference for masculine perceived or feminine perceived foods from a menu. And furthermore, whether they would be stressed out about their choices. And they used word choice along with kind of common stereotypes, you know, like meat is masculine, salad is feminine, to create these perceptions. Mm-hmm. And they found that given a too short chunk of time to choose something from the menu, both men and women would order a pretty even mix of masculinized and feminized foods. But given as much time as they wanted to peruse the menu, men would gravitate towards the masculine foods and women would still order basically whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
They later ran an experiment that found that having to pick amongst these lady and dude gendered items did indeed seem to stress guys out. Men performed worse on a subsequent memory task, mm-hmm. and women did not. And this all seems to confirm other research that men are generally more concerned about appearing gender normative than women are, up to and including their dietary choices, a.k.a. the patriarchy hurts everyone.
Yes, it does. And back on my old show, back when I used to produce Stuff Mom Never Told You videos, we did an episode on why men are more associated with, like, meat, eating meat.
Ew!
And it's really interesting and has to kind of do with the fact that they were working, like, old times, old days. They were working long hours, like, physical
work. More physical
work,
labor. Mm-hmm.
And it was a special thing.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so just to fuel them for their hard labor, they got the first choice of meat. They cut it and they got to eat it. Anyway, we should do a whole episode on it sometime. Oh. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that sounds nice and depressing.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know.
but really fascinating, and I love that kind of study. I'm glad that there's research into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of hard work and intense labor, we've got some physical chemistry coming up next.
Ooh.
But first, a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Okay, so quiche science.
Ooh, quiche science.
Yeah. So a quiche is a type of baked or set custard. And in this, you've got four basic stuff things at play. You've got egg whites, egg yolks, milk fats, and milk kind of watery stuffs.
Sounds so appetizing.
The stuff that isn't the fat.
Right.
Yes. It sounds really delicious when you put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the egg whites. The egg whites are the kind of jelliest part of an egg. They contain these proteins called albumins that start out as kind of tight, individualistic coils of amino acids. And these protein molecules have both hydrophilic or water-loving bits on their outsides and then hydrophobic or water-hating bits kind of curled up on their insides, similar to proteins in milk. Unlike in milk, though, when you heat them up, they lose their structure. Suddenly, all of those water-hating bits are freaking out and looking for something to protect them. So they cling to other protein molecules, meaning that the proteins all wind up linking with each other and therefore trapping bits of liquid amongst themselves. The proteins in the egg yolks coagulate similarly, but at a higher temperature than the whites do. So you can kind of game your quiche by adding different ratios of whole eggs to just yolks or just whites. More whites mean that you get a firmer gel that you have to be kind of a little bit extra careful not to burn or scramble when you're cooking it. And more yolks mean a softer gel that's a little bit more forgiving.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, okay, the milk fats and the milk watery bits. In a quiche, these are going to be the bulk of the liquid that gets trapped up by those coagulating egg proteins, all right? So your balance of milk fat to milk watery stuff will affect the creaminess, the mouthfeel of the final product. If you want an extra creamy quiche, you can also sub in some creme fraiche or sour cream to help out with this. But you do have to be a little bit careful because water and water-soluble minerals help create an ideal gel in the quiche. The minerals help create more bonds among the protein chains, creating the really good wobbly network that you're looking for.
A wobbly network.
A wobbly network.
I love this. I always make the outlines, and I have sections for science, and I'm like, oh, I'll leave that one to Lauren, and she never lets me down. This is so cool. I love knowing this stuff because it helps you when you're cooking, if you know why.
If you know why the science works, then yeah.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, it helps you troubleshoot a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of cooking, we do have a few cooking tips for you.
Yeah. Okay. So to keep your custard stable, a.k.a. smooth instead of chunky, nobody likes a chunky custard. You can take a couple steps. First, you can add up to a tablespoon of flour to your custard base, whisk it in there. That'll help absorb water and blend it throughout the mixture, avoiding any lumps from pockets of steam. Also, experts recommend to bake your quiche low and slow, no higher than 300 degrees, and maybe lengthen the baking time accordingly to about an hour or so. Higher heat can scramble the egg proteins before they have a chance to gel up with all of that delicious dairy.
Mm-hmm.
You should also cook and season your add-ins separately to prevent them from messing up that water ratio in your custard.
You should maybe think about prick the pie dough with a fork or what have you before pouring in the egg custard mixture to prevent rising.
And this way you won't have, yeah, little weird puffy bubbles in your crust.
You could also try brushing the crust with egg whites.
That's a step you would take after you par or blind bake the crust, but before you pour in the custard. And it helps seal the crust against any moisture in the custard to keep it crisp.
Use one egg per person as a general rule of thumb, and the cream should be more prominent than the eggs.
There is a lot of debate about the correct ratio of egg to dairy and whether you should use all whole eggs or some whole eggs and some separated yolks and the correct ratio of milk to cream. You know, everyone agrees that you want to taste the eggs but not wind up making an omelet and that you want it to be rich but not too rich. But no one really seems to agree on like which point in any of these spectrums is just right. So if you're not sure where you fall in this debate, then try a recipe that's sort of middle of the road first with about half milk and half cream and approximately equal volume of egg to dairy, which means about 5 eggs per cup of dairy. In metric, that equals about 2 eggs per 100 milliliters.
Yeah, so there you go. Some tips to help you next time. Another thing you might think about if you're getting creative when researching this one, I stumbled upon a recipe for a quiche that was made with a Doritos crust.
Dorito crust? Ooh,
yeah.
Like nacho Doritos or like Cool Ranch?
I think it was nacho.
Oh, man.
The bright powder made me suspect nacho.
Yeah.
I
believe you, but now I really want a Cool Ranch crust.
The person who did it was saying he was trying to make it less of this, the bougie thing that we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
So, like, bring it into the pop culture?
Back,
I don't know.
Back into the band cave?
Yeah. See, it's got a Doritos crust, fellas. Now you can enjoy it. Anyway, that's about it for quiche.
Yeah.
Brings us to
listener mail.
Listener mail. So, Alex wrote in about an ad she saw after listening to our expiration dates episode. I just had my mind blown by your most recent expiration dates episode, and then when I was walking home, I saw this bus ad in Harlem. It's fairly related, although I wish there was a way to print the backstory of fake expiration dates on a subway ad. Either way, it gets a similar point across about the food waste problem in our country. And you cannot see the photo. We'll try to remember to post it. But it's like an egg, and it says best diffused across, and then underneath it says trashing one egg waste 55 gallons of water. And it's trying to stop food waste.
Yeah. It's just best diffused, period.
Yeah.
Heather also wrote in about our butter episode. You mentioned butter carving. The Minnesota State Fair still does this. Every year, the current Princess Kay of the Milky Way, that's great, and her court get their sculptures made out of huge blocks of butter. These blocks are 90 pounds each and are quite impressive to see. Princess Kay and her court are sculpted live during the 2 running weeks of the fair. You can watch the bundled up royalty slowly spin on a turntable in the 40 degree cooler while they're sculpted. It's very cool and something to see. It also happens to be in the dairy building that serves ice cream treats, so you can watch while you wait in line for a delicious sundae or milkshake.
That's some excellent entertainment value right there.
That is magical.
It is.
Man. I feel real conflicted about that process. Like, I don't think I would want to sit for a butter sculpture in 40-degree freezers.
You'd have to dress for it, for sure. But I think it might be worth seeing.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So thank you so much to y'all for writing in. If you would like to write in to us with anything, you can do that too.
Yes. Our email is foodstuff@howstuffworks.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We're also on social media. You can contact us there. We're on Twitter and Facebook at FoodstuffHSW, and we are on Instagram at Foodstuff. Also, thank you to our amazing audio producer, Tristan McNeil. And so we hope to hear from you, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.